and welcome to the Return to Vibrant Health podcast, a show highlighting the power of lifestyle instead of pills and procedures to treat and even reverse many of today's chronic illnesses. We explore how lifestyle, functional, and integrative medicine can address the root cause of disease, which is really what we're going after in order to create true healing. I'm your host, Susie Spell. I'm a nurse practitioner and a health coach trained in lifestyle medicine, as well as holistic and mind-body practices. I'm really on a mission to spread hope and healing, and in doing so, empower you to take control of your health destiny, and also to connect you with leaders in the field so you can continue to learn more and more on your journey. Okay, before we get started, I want to tell you about a free resource I created for anyone struggling with high blood pressure, which is also called hypertension. This is especially for those women out there who take care of everyone else except themselves. I see you and I get it. So this guide covers a few things. Here they are: why blood pressure is such a concern, how to take your blood pressure correctly at home based on the U.S. guidelines for hypertension management, a one-week blood pressure log that you can print out and have there by your monitor, the American Heart Association blood pressure categories chart, so you will know where your blood pressure falls at any given time, and some easy and powerful lifestyle tweaks, and of course, a little section on anxiety, because I think that plays a huge role with blood pressure management. So there's something in there for anxiety. And you can visit www.vitaltransformationsllc.com/taking-bp-at-home. And I will link it in the show notes, so don't worry about writing it down. And remember, it's really meant to guide and educate, and it's certainly not a substitute for that sacred and trusting relationship that you have with your primary medical provider. And always defer to them for specific guidance for you in particular. Let's get to it. Hello and welcome back. I have such an interesting guest to introduce you to, Yogi Aaron. He is the founder of Applied Yoga Anatomy and Muscle Activation, also called Ayama. It's a system of yoga that no one else is teaching, and it's really revolutionary because it's this way to practice yoga that focuses on activating and engaging muscles rather than stretching them. And this particular kind of methodology can reduce pain and risk of injury, while at the same time, increasing range of motion, muscle strength, stability, and alignment. And who wouldn't want that for the rest of their lives? So what I love about his work is that he is flipping the script and challenging conventional wisdom to craft a new brand or a new way of not only caring for your physical body and eliminating pain, but coming into alignment with your purpose here on earth. So when you visit his website, which is yogiaaron.com, I'll have it in the show notes, you'll see this saying: become fearless, live limitless, find out how to become pain-free so you can finally uncover your true life's purpose. And I love that. So we're going to get into that a bit, but we're also here today to really talk about how stretching may not be all it's cut out to be. So we're going to have a real candid and good conversation about stretching and why we should or shouldn't be doing that. Welcome, Yogi Aaron. I really appreciate you being here.
I appreciate you having me here, Susie. Thank you for having this conversation.
I was looking over your work, and I love a good challenge, first of all, when it comes to like something that we've always believed for a long time was the way to do things. And then when we either discover a new way or maybe what we're doing isn't quite right. And I feel like that's kind of the status quo in medicine, which is more my field, in nursing these days, mm-hmm. because, you know, we've been doing something for a long time and then we think, oh, wait, actually, maybe that's not the best way. So I want to get into why we should stop stretching. But before we get there, I really want you to tell us your origin story and if you had like an aha moment that put you on this path. And also just if you could touch on your work in general, what you do, what you offer, how people can work with you, that kind of thing.
Yeah, thank you. That's a loaded question. I could talk for the next hour just on that question.
Right.
My origin story, so the short story, and you can ask me to elaborate on anything if you want, is that I started yoga around the age of 18, and I was very tight in my body. I was very active. You know, I had a history of snowshoeing, dog sledding, long distance running, trail running, canoeing, hiking, like just all kinds of stuff. And I started noticing that I was getting tight in my body and my range of motion was becoming more limited. And so I came to the conclusion that I had my gym time, but then I needed my yoga time to stretch. So when I'm talking about yoga right now, I'm really talking about stretching. Like most people, I thought that yoga was about stretching. So I went, started doing yoga to stretch because it was a way for me to become more disciplined, trying to stretch, you know, on my own. It was challenging and boring. So I went to yoga class and started doing that. And what quickly happened was I really hurt my back. It wasn't in the yoga. It was outside of yoga. It was in my life, but it was a very new sensation for me. And I was kind of like, what's going on here? This is not how I want to live my best life at 18 years old, being debilitated. So that was my sort of first introduction. But the interesting thing, Susie, that kind of happened was I just kind of accepted that I was having a person who had back problems. So that was kind of like, you know, a more that I took on. And so, going throughout the years, I started having a lot of other issues. My knees gave out, my neck gave out, my shoulders gave out, my hips started having problems. So I was having like all of these different, you know, issues that were cropping up. And when I say issues, I'm not like little dull aches, like, you know, the neck pain was actually something that started to become reoccurring. And I would wake up in the night with like a knife driving into my shoulder blades. So when I'm talking about pain, I have so much empathy for people that are dealing with chronic pain because I've been there and I know that when you're in that chronic pain that, you know, your best friends are like, turn that frown upside down and you just want to punch them because all you can think about is getting out of that pain and you don't want like empathy from other people, although it's nice, you want to get out of pain. So that's one of the reasons why I've become so passionate, just as a side note, about kind of talking about these things, because what I have found on my own journey, and I'll get to that in a moment, is that we don't have to live in pain. You know, like some of it, yes, there's some things that there's a pathology behind it that's irreversible. But I find like with most things, we actually can flip the script on it. So what happened to me was this cycle of pain and then going to yoga, aka stretching. I'm trying to be very specific about that. And then, you know, just this kind of cycle, rinse, repeat, you know, sort of thing was continuous. And what happened was it kind of went on for about 25 years. And then I finally ended up in a surgeon's office, an orthopedic surgeon's office, who was saying to me, you might need a spinal fusion. And because at that point, I was so debilitated, I could barely even walk. There was just so much nerve pain. I think there was like other light bulb moments, but that was like the big one. The heavens open up and a beam of light comes down, hits you at the top of the head and goes, something has to change and this cannot continue. And so that kind of led me into really studying muscle activation technique. And muscle activation technique is a type of massage, for lack of better words, that the therapist focuses on looking for muscular weakness and then fixing it. And that's kind of it in a nutshell. Like it's a diagnostic tool to go in and get muscles working. And I had it done to me before, but at this moment, after I had seen my doctor, I kind of decided that I needed to look for more answers and I needed to have a better understanding of my body. And I would even say like more of a scientific understanding. I find that so many people, when I say so many people, I'm actually saying most people, like 99.9% of people in the yoga world just have no clue about the human body. They think they do, but they don't. And I was one of those kinds of people. I thought I knew something. And I realized through these experiences and was very humbled to realize that I didn't know bupkis. I knew bupkis. And so I decided to do the course, and this was invented by or created by Greg Roscoff. It's out of Denver, Colorado. And there's very few MAT therapists. Like, there is talk about muscle activation, but he's the only one who has really come up with this systemology, and it works so brilliantly. And it's, like I said, it's just a diagnostic tool to look for muscular weakness and then giving us the ability to kind of correct, if you want to use that word, shall we say, that muscular imbalance. And so I did it just kind of with this idea of, I really want to learn more about the body. And I think as a nurse, you can appreciate having, you know, your medical background. And I, just as a side note, I had actually a physiotherapist in my retreat 2 weeks ago, came up to me. He said, give me two compliments. He said, I have never heard a yoga teacher who had such an understanding of the human body. And I was like, wow, because, you know, I'm very good in my lane, but my knowledge still isn't like that much. Like, my knowledge is still like razor thin to someone with a PhD behind their name knows. I don't know. Maybe it's just the way that I explain things. And then he said he'd never had seen a yoga teacher blend like this spiritual and this anatomy or physical part so well. So that was a huge compliment. But then as I was doing this MAT training, I was like, well, how do I translate this into yoga? Because this is a very much like a one-on-one modality that you're learning. I can't run around to 100 people in a class and do this. And so slowly and surely, I started creating this Ayama system, Applied Yoga Anatomy and Muscle Activation System, which has nothing to do with MAT, but it's taking sort of the bones of it, if you will, and looking, first of all, teaching yoga teachers what are the different directions of movement. So, for example, if we're doing a side bend, what muscles are responsible for shortening when we're side bending? And you can pick up like 100 anatomy books in the yoga world. None of them address these topics. You know, it's sort of like, well, this is where your femur is. This is where your hips are. When you're in this pose, maybe this is what your body looks like from an anatomical perspective, but it doesn't teach anything about muscle function. It doesn't show anything about muscle function. So part of the Ayama system is to teach people about muscle function at a rudimentary level. It's not like a deep dive into it per se, like, again, like a PhD. My trainings are 2 weeks to 4 weeks, so, you know, perspective. But it is kind of starting to give people, and my hope is to give the average Joe, you know, or Mary, a understanding of when they bend forward, what muscles are shortening, what muscles should be shortening. And if you bend forward and you have pain in your back, well, that's a problem. That's because, not because the back muscles are having problems, but because the front body is having problems. And so I go through this system systematically, and that's kind of what inspired me to write the book and try and make like it something more playful and fun for people to be able to sink their teeth into. But more importantly than giving them the tools to be able to go and fix it. So like one time I was just recently like going for a walk and I had a pain in my groin. And so I kind of stopped for a moment and I went, self, this is very interesting. Why do you have pain in your groin? And so I was thinking like, well, what is the opposite muscles of the adductors? Well, they're the abductors and, you know, the glute med muscle. So I just stopped. I did a very, took 1 minute. I did a quick hack to get my abductors, the glute meds, working properly. And then the pain not only disappeared, but it never came back. And so what we start to learn is like pain is a symptom of muscular imbalance. And once we get the muscular system working properly, we then start to be able to get rid of pain very quickly. And 9 times out of 10, like almost permanently. And that's one of the things about stretching that like normally like a person, not even just a yoga person, a fitness person, anybody like has a pain in their groin. And then what do? They try and stretch it out, which is actually not only going to make it not help the pain inevitably. It might feel good for a second. And I can explain why if you're interested, but it really is like going to not only just fix it, but make it worse in the long run. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Right. Yes, in a nutshell. Which is, no, well, and you know what, I a couple things I heard that I just love, which is this curiosity and wanting to learn more, right? Having that open-mindedness of a growth mindset. How am I going to figure this out? How can it inform my practice? And then how you can help people. And really, pain is a huge thing. So if you can help people get out of pain, or help people that help people get out of pain, what a beautiful thing to help people with, because then you're freed up to do all this other stuff. And you glossed over it, but I want you to comment, just tell us a little bit about the book. You mentioned the book. It's called Stop Stretching, right? I see it there behind you. Can you tell us just a little bit about that real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. So Stop Stretching, at the beginning of 2022, there was kind of feeling like, should I keep this by myself or should I start to share it? And when I say by myself, I mean with myself and my teacher trainings. So I lead yoga teacher trainings and yoga immersions. And I just, so I felt like purpose was knocking at the door of my heart, and felt like I really wanted to create more of a conversation about this in the yoga world, because there, as you know, there is so much obsession with putting your foot behind your head and kind of doing, you know, these deep stretches. And you see, you know, on so many Instagram pages of women in skimpy leotards with their legs spread open and they're folding forward. And it's like, that's the impression that a lot of people get with yoga. And so what I'm trying to do is start to, as best as I can, create a conversation around, A, what is yoga really about? But also B, if you really are going to try to force this kind of flexibility, as Greg, my teacher, always says, flexibility always leads to instability. And when you have instability, you will always open up the opportunity for injury, period. And that we find this a lot. There are so many senior yoga teachers, even yoga people that haven't been practicing that long, that are dealing with huge injuries, and they just haven't, most of them are struggling to put, you know, two and two together, and realizing that, that it's the stretching, not the yoga. I'm going to start differentiating now. Yoga.
I was going to ask you.
It's the stretching that's really causing the problems. And so that kind of really inspired me to make the book. It's a book that I kind of go through the story, my pain, chronic pain story. I share how I came up with the yama. But the real meat of the book is like going through the different systems of the body and understanding what those systems are, the muscular systems, from an yama perspective. And how do we start to get those systems stronger so that we can deal with the force tolerances of our life? I have a very good friend of mine who is sort of on my marketing team, and her husband want to go to Antarctica. I think it's next year or 2025, and they want to do this marathon. And when they told me that, I kind of went like, excuse me, you know, your body are in no shape right now to do this. You do realize that, right? Like you're not in your early 20s anymore. You're in your 30s. You just had a kid. You know, you're sitting at a desk job all day long, and now you want to go and put that kind of stress on your body. Like, great that you want to, you have goals. You need to start doing these things. And they're kind of a little lazy. They help me promote this, but they don't actually do it. But the point is that this kind of technology can really start to help people. When I was like in my 30s, when I turned 30, I suffered crippling knee pain, and I literally hung up my hiking shoes. And I really wanted to start taking up hiking again, you know, when I was like around 47. But I started doing these muscle activations. Not only could I return to hiking, but I actually hung up my knee brace. And so this stuff can work for people. It does work for people, but we have to use it. But it opens up the doorway for us to be able to do more in life, which is the ultimate goal, to help everybody live their best life.
Right. So can you tell us what yoga really is, and that it's not just stretching? Because I hear that a lot, because the clients and patients I see are ones that have been sedentary, and now they're wanting to go exercise. And there's that. Yes. And the second piece to that is some of the recommendations from my training that I give to people is about stretching. So I'm thinking to myself now, hearing some of this information, like, what else do I need to know about stretching before I'm really recommending you go find a YouTube video or whatever the clinical guidelines are around stretching, right? So like, how can I make this better for those people that aren't yoga types who just want to get back to exercise?
There's quite a few questions in there, but I want to just quickly address something while it's in my head, that you said that there's clinical guidelines. I would argue that a lot. I think a lot of those, what you're calling clinical guidelines, and I say this with respect, you know, but I would actually say they're not really clinical guidelines. They're more like guidelines. I posted something one time about stretching on one group. Somebody came back with an article from the Mayo Clinic. Well, it wasn't an article. It was a blog post. And somebody ahead of the Mayo Clinic's marketing team thought that this would be a good shareable thing that would create traffic on their site. I know that because I run a blog. I run three blogs. So we have to be very careful. And I have done deep dives into clinical studies. And most of those clinical studies that I have seen either conclude one of two things. They either conclude that stretching in no way prevents injury, like there's no evidence to do that. Or they say, because I cite these studies in my book, that it actually causes more problems. And so what happens when we stretch? When the muscle feels like it's being pulled to a certain point or it feels unstable, a healthy muscle, a healthy at a neuromuscular level, what should happen is it sends a message to the central nervous system in the form of gamma motor neurons. So it's basically saying like, hey, we need to contract, stabilize this joint to be able to move, whatever. Or we feel like there's instability, aka stretching, happening. So what happens then, the central nervous system sends back a message to the muscle saying, contract, contract, contract. And what happens when we do force a stretch is that, aka elongating a muscle, which by the way, defeats the purpose of the muscle. The muscle should be learning how to shorten better, not elongating. What happens then is that messaging system stops. And over time, it actually becomes diminished, which explains why some people start to become more, quote unquote, flexible, but there's no stability because that messaging system between the muscle and the central nervous system stops. And so when the central nervous system senses instability, it has nowhere to send those messages because that line has been basically cut off, for lack of better words right now. So in my purview, in my lane, what we're trying to do is actually improve that communication system so that the muscle always has that ability to contract and contract on demand. And so what they've actually found in a lot of studies is like they take athletes and they make them stretch before they run. And they found that their muscles actually lose that force output. Sometimes some people call it like force output. Sometimes in MAT, we call it that ability to contract and contract on demand. But those muscles lose that ability for, I've seen some studies say 30 minutes and some say as much as 90 minutes. And then we get into your lane, you know, working with older people who are already, you know, having issues in their neuromuscular system. They're already, their glutes are not working, their psoas isn't working because they've had stress, because they've had operations. I mean, we can go down the list of reasons. So the better thing to do is to get them moving. That's very important. We need movement, but we also want to approach it with, I'm going to use this word, intelligence, in a way that helps them to develop a better neuromuscular response. And so they can start building that up. You asked me what yoga is. So there's so much that we could say about what yoga is. Whenever I get questions about yoga, I always go to the Yoga Sutras and the first four sutras right at the beginning of the book. It opens up and it says, all of us have a purpose in life to fulfill. And we all have that capacity to fulfill it. When I think of people, you know, on a bigger scale who have done that. I think of JFK, and I think of one of the most beautiful speeches he gave, "We are going to the moon," you know, that's very purpose driven. I think of Gandhi, I think of Mandela, I think of Mother Teresa, you know, Golda Meir. There's like these people that had a purpose and they were able to fulfill it. And then of course, you know, people on a smaller scale, but the Yoga Sutras also says that a lot of us put obstacles in our own way. We are geniuses at creating our own, you know, self-created prison and suffering. And so we can have these two thoughts at the same time. And so the Yoga Sutra says we have this purpose. We need to fulfill that purpose. And if we don't, it's life's greatest loss. So let's get to work on removing the obstacles. And the obstacles are within ourselves. And so yoga is the systemology to remove our own obstacles so that we can live our best life.
Right. And from my understanding of yoga, it's not just the body movements. There's more than just the body movements or the stretching. There's more to yoga than what we think it is, at least in the US and some other places who have newly found yoga.
Yeah, I mean, there's nowhere in the yoga scriptures, there's no mention of stretching or flexibility. I kind of blame two people for this phenomena. There's other people I could blame as well. But one of those two people, and I say this with a lot of love and respect because I absolutely adore this person, is Jane Fonda. And Jane Fonda, when she came up with Jane Fonda workouts, you know, in the early 80s, late 70s, she was there teaching yoga in a skimpy leotard and leg warmers. And so when people think of yoga, that's typically what, well, now they think of, you know, yoga equals Lululemon.
Right.
But yeah, so there's definitely this kind of like sensationalism about what yoga is. And in the scriptures, posture is important for a few reasons. And I could spend the next hour talking about this because it's one of my favorite topics. But to sum it up, the essence of what we teach in posture is to get stable. And the word in stability in Sanskrit is stira. And stira, in its truest translation, means still. So it's doing things to really start to embody stillness, like literally embody stillness. And that we're working towards becoming still. And part of that is that we need to get stronger in the body and be able to have that stillness. In other words, to get rid of restlessness. So, you know, a lot of people that do asana get very stuck in postures. People that are doing postures, they just get stuck there. And what we really need to do is transcend that and start to get more into some of the other things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for that. I think there's a lot of misconceptions around it. So yes. I want to get to some questions about how you are helping people, like my clients or anybody else. Are you teaching teachers and then they are going out into the world? Or are you also teaching or working with individuals or groups? How do you work? Can you tell us a little bit about what you do in that way?
Yeah, sure. So there's a few different ways that I work. The easiest and most accessible way is for people to access some of the free content that I have. I have a 7-day pain-free series they can sign up for that's available on my website. There's also a 15-day challenge, Dare to Be Pain-Free Challenge. I also have the book. So the book really starts to systematically go through what's going on in your body and how to start fixing it. One of the things that I really want to stress at this moment is knowledge is only power when made available. In other words, you have to use it. You can't just look at it.
Yes.
So people have to do it. So that's part of the equation. I also do yoga immersions in Costa Rica right now. And so one is 14 days, one is 28 days. That's one of the best ways to come and work with me. I will be offering more things down the road, retreats. And, you know, I'm also working on creating an online series of courses in this. So it's like I've been running to catch up with the growing interest that people have been having. But I have worked with a lot of older people There's actually an interesting review on Amazon. She gave me 1 star. I think she was like a 60-something-year-old lady who was very cynical about the book, which I kind of found ironic because I actually have a lot of clients and students in the ages of 60 and even 70, and one is even 80, who is doing this stuff. And it's really making a huge difference. One of my clients, Ginger, I think she's 66 now, and this has really been saving her life and opening up more opportunities to become more mobile in life. Again, you have to use it. Ginger is also a yoga teacher and teaches older people, of course. And I think she does 1 or 2 or 3 classes a week. And so she loves teaching this stuff to people. And she will not teach stretching anymore because she's had firsthand experience of doing stretches, even though she knew she shouldn't be, but she didn't listen to me. She won't do it again. She won't make that mistake again. But she stretched one time and then was doing something very active and completely messed up her back. So she kind of had that direct experience of stretching leads to instability, which leads to injury. But mm-hmm. she gets really a big kick out of teaching this stuff to her senior population.
Can beginners do this? Engage with your material?
Absolutely. Since your population is a little older, I really want to stress one point. I don't usually stress this that much, but it's really important. Like one of the axioms in a yama is less is more. So one of the ways that we're doing these muscle activations is through isometric contractions. So for example, if you stretch your arm out and then you bring your hand towards your shoulder and you just squeeze your bicep, that's an isometric contraction. And you actually can start to activate the bicep, for example. So, you know, there's a lot of the stuff that I'm teaching is isometric contractions. And if you take somebody that's in a stressed out place, and then you make them go for broke and you're like, lift as high as you can and really work it. You can actually end up with more problems. And so the less is more is really important, especially when you're working with older populations or beginner people. There was one trip I did to, I was taking a vacation and 2 days before that vacation, I hadn't worked out in like a month or something. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get my Mediterranean body in the next 30 minutes. And I really messed my back up. It was horrible. But I had to do the muscle activations to start giving me some stability. But I really backed off. I only went 10%. And so that's what I would say is like, just you, when you're working with older people or beginner people or a combination, really less is more. And that's what I would really stress with that.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. Thought of a question. I don't know if you'll have an answer to it or not, but there are people in this world who are like hyper mobile. I had a little foster daughter at one time who just loved doing all the back bends, things that she could do, and wanted to be in gymnastics. And she was so flexible to the point maybe she had a certain condition that's a medical condition. So I took her to a pediatric specialist and, they said she didn't have that condition, but she was just very hypermobile and she liked being hypermobile, but they told her you actually need to work on strength. So do you have any experience with people who are hypermobile and what your experience might have been?
I mean, definitely in my yoga trainings, I get people coming in that are hypermobile. What I always find, always, hands down, is that that hypermobility, that flexibility, whether it was due to hypermobility or because it was cultivated because they were ballerinas, dancers, gymnasts, they're always having pain by the time they get to their 30s, 40s, and sometimes 50s. They usually need some surgical intervention. One of my best friends is a senior yoga teacher who had a hip replacement by the age of 42 or something.
Wow.
And that's not good. And I kept begging her to back off, and I would just watch her showing off her flexibility. But then she paid the biggest price for that. She's also had knee surgery. She's also, I think, had shoulder surgery as well. And she might actually need to get the other hip addressed. And I said to her time and time again, please stop doing these poses. Please stop doing these poses. And then she doesn't. And the most interesting thing, just as a side note, which I find fascinating, and it's not just with her, it's like epidemic in the yoga world, that you'll see like these yoga teachers, and I'm being kind of metaphorical right now, not literal, but you'll see them getting wheeled down the hospital hallway to get their hip replaced, and then yelling over their shoulder, remember to open your hips in your yoga practice, and the importance of opening your hips. So there's a lot of weird, erroneous perceptions in the yoga world that we don't pay enough attention to. And the solution with these yoga teachers, a lot of times, is just you need to stretch more. When I was dealing with my back problems, I constantly had yoga teachers say to me, like, you need to open your hips more. You need to open your back. You need to open your hamstrings. That's not even a biomechanical thing. It just doesn't make sense. You know, I now joke like, okay, great. You're going to open your hips. What you want, dislocated hips? Is that what you want? Do you want to walk through life with dislocated hips? So going back to your question, we look at people who are gymnasts and we look at these 16-year-olds and we think, wow, they're so amazing. Yeah, they're 16 years old. Come on.
Yeah, right.
And when you look at the Olympic lineup of these people, 16, 17, 18, 22, 24, usually somewhere around the age of 20, 22, they all have ACE bandages. They're all like got knee braces, back braces, because their muscles have lost that ability to contract properly. And it just gets worse with stress, age, you know, more trauma, more overuse. And they need their ice packs. They need their heat packs because they just are dealing with a lot of pain. And a lot of gymnasts by the age of 30 need surgery of some kind to correct imbalances. So yes, absolutely. People that are hyperflexible need more focus on muscle activation because they already are dealing with extreme instability. And I think you said your foster daughter, did I hear that correctly? She's going to have problems when she gets older, and she's young right now. Her body's producing enough human growth hormone to compensate, but she will have problems later on in life. Inevitably.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that there was this thing in the yoga world of these kinds of injuries. I mentioned to a friend of mine who loves yoga and does a lot of yoga. Maybe she's an instructor. I can't remember. And I told her I was going to talk to you. And she said, oh, yeah, I know. I've heard of really serious injuries from doing yoga in some people, you know. And so it kind of piqued her interest. So I think this is a message to share with a lot of people in all kinds of ways, whether they're just, you know, a client of yours or another yoga instructor or even medical people, so that we can guide people in the right direction and avoid injury.
Well, there's so many reasons for that. One is because of the lack of knowledge that yoga teachers have about the human body and what's really going on, because there's been so many erroneous perceptions made. Like when I was telling you about my neck pain, people would say, well, you got to stretch out your pecs. Your pecs are so tight. And it just made it worse. And so it's just like people just like their go-to is just stretch. And that's going to fix a problem. And it does feel good for a moment, but then the pain comes back always with more of a vengeance. The other problem in the yoga world specifically, but also we see this in the fitness world, is people doing adjustments on their students. So if I'm twisting, a yoga teacher would come and take their hands to me and then twist me more beyond my range of motion. And anytime I'm doing these hands-on assists and pushing somebody beyond what their neuromuscular system is telling them to do, I'm now bypassing that. And then there's a lack of the proprioception between, again, the brain and the muscle. It's just cut. And so I'm actually just making them more unstable. And then they go and do another pose that needs that stability, and it's not there. And so they're now putting stress on their system, and that accumulated stress is what leads to injuries. I try to be very careful, because it's not the yoga that's injuring people. It's the way that people are approaching these postures, and they're doing it to look like that girl on Instagram in the leotard that's got her legs wide open and her chest on the floor, you know?
Right. Yes.
To kind of try and be funny about it. But we have to laugh at it, right?
Right, right. And, you know, when you're trying to do it and you're a newbie, you feel a little defeated. You're just not used to moving your body that way. And you're thinking, forget it. This isn't for me because I don't look like the girl on Instagram and probably never will or whatever.
Yeah.
I thank you a lot for meeting with me and for having this conversation. I have one additional question, which is the way that you integrate AT, the muscle activation, two things. If a teacher is having to go through 200 or 500 hours of training, is the material you're integrating, is it a lot more study or hours, or does it flow nicely through what's already required of teachers? Does that make sense?
I just want to make one little correction. Sorry to do that, but I don't teach MAT. I just want to be very clear that MAT is something that was developed by Greg Roscoff. And what I did was I took some of the bones of that and then came up with the Ayama system, which was just kind of like learning more about anatomy and then how to use that knowledge to activate our muscular system. And I highly recommend people find an MAT therapist. I mean, having someone work on you at that level is amazing. I mean, talk about for your clients. I've seen MAT therapists give new life to elderly people. So it's quite something. So when a yoga teacher goes through their, if you want to call it licensing, it's a 200-hour level. We learn how to teach people how to move their body safely and how to breathe. That's kind of our lane. That's very narrow. And that's what I always stress with my students so much and then try and give them tools for that. Part of the requirements of that 200 hours is to do 30 hours of anatomy training. And so what I do is I probably actually give my students a lot more than 30 hours, definitely. But I incorporate all of this stuff with applied yoga anatomy and muscle activation into that anatomy part. So they really leave having a clear understanding. Part of my trainings are also self-study. We open up the self-study section 2 months before they come. And then they have like 3 months after the training to complete it. So they really have like 6 months to go through really, you know, 20 hours worth of content and practice. And then they get a lot more when they're with me in person. So it's a really beautiful thing because it starts to prepare them. They get the hands on and then they go home and they get to keep practicing it for many months afterwards. Really, right. Part of it is trying to get them to keep it in their bones.
Yes. 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 So are you full time in Costa Rica? Like your whole business is out of Costa Rica?
Yeah, I run a yoga retreat center in Costa Rica. So this is where I call home. I am going to be doing a lot more traveling around the U.S. And Canada to promote my book, to do yoga workshops and whatnot. And I'm also working on creating more course content that people can access online as well.
Good. Very good. What is a final takeaway? So if we didn't talk about something or any one tip?
You know, I would just say that life never stops until it stops. So keep going and keep living your purpose right. every day. I'm serious.
Right.
I mean, I just see so many people in my circle who are much older than me. And I'm 51 right now. And I just see them invigorated by their life and just going and living life to the fullest. So no matter who you are, where you are, what time in your life, wake up every morning and say, how am I going to live and manifest my purpose today?
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yep. And I do work with adults mainly, and it is a wide range, but I'll tell you, so many people have a lot of medical issues. So I think this will be very interesting for them. I appreciate you and I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Susie.
You're welcome.